Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, academic classroom lectures in business and economics recorded for podcast. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 4 for Spring Semester 2010. Lecture 17, delivered on March 30, 2010. The title of this lecture is Capital Budgeting Decision Making.
Today, capital budgeting decision making. We are simple people in business. All we want to do is make money. If that requires that we destroy human lives in the process, wipe out forests, kill blue people who say, "Ewa," well, that's what we do. So sue us. Everyone else does. Thank God for a right-wing Supreme Court that understands our needs. You see, in our decision-making process, it boils down to yes or no. Pretty much every time. Yes, I will invest in this, or no, I won't. Yes, I will accept this project, or no, I will reject this project. That's how we do it, up or down. There's no nuance. Don't do that to a superior who asks for an answer. Well, I can see both sides of this, and there's sort of a Zen aspect, you know, and if you consult certain oracles, no, it's an answer. One way or the other, there's an answer, yes or no. And that's one of the things that I emphasize in this class from this point forward, is accept or reject. It's one or the other, and that's the terminology we use. We accept the project or we reject the project. So on a quiz or an exam, if I say, "What is your decision?" You say, we accept project A, we reject project B. Up or down. It's that simple. And the decision criteria we use, although complicated sometimes in the math, at the end of the day, it stands out very easily whether we are go or no go. In this regard, we are going to have to look at projects in terms of their cash flow. To make it simple, in a class like this, and it gets a little more nuanced in later classes. I might get a little more nuanced. But in these kinds of classes, what we do is we assume there will be a cash outflow right away, your investment in the project. That will be CF sub zero, the cash flow out. It will be a negative number. Then we will assume that the project will bring cash flow in. CF1, CF2, CF3, however long the project brings us money, and up to a CF sub N when the project ends. It might have a salvage value at the end. We sell the scrap metal or sell the technology to some loser company. Or it might just die, peter out. But there is a point where you will kill the project. And generally, we kill a project. There are always going to be costs in a project, obviously. And there are going to be revenues, you would hope, in a project. There will come a point where the costs will overrun the revenues, and that's when we kill it. You don't keep it alive, you just kill it. That doesn't mean that you kill it forever. There are times when you just put a project aside and wait for a new generation, which is quite the thing. Or wait for the proverbial crap to stop hitting the fan, and then we bring the product back under a new label, under a new name. That's the case oftentimes with fads in clothing. It's also the case with other products. Harley Davidson, we waited. And sure enough, those young men who were James Dean in their early years, they got responsible, and now they're going through their second childhood, and they're putting their big fat asses back on Harleys. So sometimes we'll just let a project die away, but you don't have any sentiment and don't have any moral or emotional attachment to a project. It will have a cash inflow, a cash outflow. As long as it's paying the bills, you keep it alive, but when it stops paying the bills, you kill it, you set it aside. Now, one more thing about cash flow. Unfortunately, we don't have a crystal ball. When I say cash flow, I want you to always keep in your mind, in parentheses, the word expected. It is the expected cash flow at period 2. It is the expected cash flow at period 8. The only thing that is not expected is how much the stupid project is going to cost, unless you're the government, and then you just multiply the expected, the cost by 20, and you've got the actual cost after the budget overruns. But I can assure you that when I say the word cash flow, I want you to understand that we don't know the future. You bust your butt to get your best guesses, and then you go from there. Later, your people in your company who don't like you, the outside analysts, are going to say, well, you said you'd bring in $700,000 on this project in year 4, and it turns out that it was $600,000. You know what you say at that point? I did my best. The industry standards. I didn't do anything different. I didn't go wild. I did my industry standards, and so you may bite me. You see, you get your best expectation. You get your defenses up, and then you go into this world with your head up and your fangs out. Okay, but you make sure that your fangs have real enamel on them. You've done the work, and then you just let things go. Let the project do what it does, and you learn from your mistakes. Okay, I've said all that. We have to turn the expected cash flows into the future into now money. You've seen the present value formulas, all of that great stuff, the now money we have to take. The cash flow expected at year 5, what is its equivalent now? The cash flow at year 8, what is its equivalent now? And in order to do that, we'll need a discount rate for those cash flows. And you know, as well as I do, what is that discount rate that we use, sir? How do we get a discount rate? The risk-free rate. Oh, I would dearly love to have risk-free projects. Then I'd be the government, and I could just tax people for my income. What do we use?
CAPM.
Yes! I love it when you talk like that. Yes, capital asset pricing model. That's our standard way. Now, there are other ways that, even to this day, I still run into companies, they pull the discount rate. I swear they're pulling it out of their ass. I don't know. But in the realistic, your best defense position is from pulling the discount rate for a project from CAPM. You find the beta for a project of similar risk, and then you use that beta to calculate out R sub F plus beta of the project times K sub M minus K sub F, and then you get your discount rate. Now, that's not perfect. There are other ways to do it. You can do whatever you want as far as varying this model. There are other ways, like I said, but don't just pull a discount right out of your butt. That's what I'm going to do today in a lot of cases. You get your discount rate, and then you just start pulling your cash flows back to the present. Ultimately, you're going to have a balance of now monies. There will be the now money that was the cost up front of the project. That's a negative. Against that, the counterweight will be the present value of those future expected positive cash flows. If the ultimate number, when you add that negative with those positives, if it comes up the answer positive, you accept. If it comes up negative, you reject. Period. That's what it comes down to. If it comes up positive, you accept. If it comes up negative, you reject. Now I'm going to try to ask a question here to see if I can see how incredibly intelligent you folks have become through the course of this semester. Madam. Yeah, that's right. Don't give me that. Get away from me, you prevert. Look. As the discount rate goes up, if I were to try higher and higher discount rates on future expected cash flows, what would happen to the present value of those future expected cash flows? You got one way or the other. Take a stab.
Up, down, or down.
Okay. Let's try this. What's 100 divided by 1 plus 0.10? Never mind. But now, that number, what the hell are you asking me that? Okay, but compare that. What is 100 divided by 1 plus 0.20? Is it a bigger number or a smaller number? Bingo. You see, as the discount rate goes up, the present value goes down. They are inversely related. So if I were to look at a project, it had some stream of expected cash flows that were positive pouring in from the future, and a negative sitting out here on the front end. It would look something like this. At low discount rates, if I were discounting the cash flow at low rates, I would be more likely to see a positive net present value. The positive future expected cash flows would be big when counterbalancing that negative at the beginning. But as I increase the discount rate on those positive cash flows coming out there in the future, their present value gets worse and worse. It gets to be to the point where it begins to really suck. And ultimately, there will come a discount rate, possibly, where that negative cash flow right on the front end is going to be bigger than the present value of those positive cash flows that are coming out there in the future. That is the profile of a net present value graph. The NPV will fall as you use larger and larger discount rates. And ultimately, it will become negative. There would be a discount rate that you would use that would be the threshold. We have a name for that discount rate. In the old days, it was a pain in the butt to calculate because you essentially had to just try different discount rates until you bracketed one discount rate, NPV was still positive. Then a discount rate, a percent higher NPV was negative, and then you just started having to go back and forth until you got it to a certain degree of accuracy. That was a pain in the derhi rear. Now you punch buttons on a stupid calculator, and it just snorts out the answer instantly to you, which really irritates me. But see that point right there? That's called the internal rate of return of the project, the IRR. The internal rate of return. Now, the NPV decision-making criterion is the one that I emphasize. The other one is an actual IRR criterion. You find the discount rate at which the NPV is negative. Then what you do is you have already set in your mind a hurdle rate for projects. Any internal rate of return that is above my hurdle rate versus any internal rate of return that is below my pre-decided hurdle rate. This is called the internal rate of return decision-making method. Now, some companies favor one or the other, but generally speaking, there's a theoretical reason that can bite you in the ass in practice, why you want to be careful with the IRR method. Now, don't get me wrong, it has its place, and I still use internal rate of return myself every once in a while as my primary. But there's a nasty little thing about internal rate of return mathematically. It has to do with a theoretical construct in cash flow, in math. You see, We usually, in a class like this, will assume you start with a negative cash flow, and then all, ever after that, they're positive cash flows. Okay, that's not terribly unrealistic. In that condition, the NPV form will be what we call monotonic. In other words, it will go straight down. Unfortunately, if the cash flow switches sign more than once, the profile will go up and down like that, which means that the IRR is not unique. It actually has several points. And depending on where your calculator started to search, that'd be the IRR you found. If your calculator started to search at, let's say, 5%, and the first breakpoint, the first node, the first root, as we call it, or zero in math, happened to be at 6%, it would find that one. But if you had started at, let's say, 11%, and there was another root at 12%, it would find that one. So you've got to be careful about IRR. If the cash flow switches sign more than once, there will be more than one IRR. And of course, that doesn't mean the IRR loses its meaning. So that's the caution I do. That's why we tend to avoid internal rate of return unless it's a simple cash flow problem where the sign of the cash flow switches just once, negative at the beginning, then positive after that. If the sign of the cash flow switches more than once, like if there's a project where at year 5 you have to pour a lot of new money in to replace equipment, that would probably mean that your IRR is going to not be a good idea to use on it because you're going to have that multi-zero feature of the polynomial. Enough of that. That's kind of a theoretical thing, but it does bite you in the ass in practice. Okay, enough of that. Enough. Where the hell did I put my... Where? Oh, God, what a drag it is getting old. Okay, now I've got just very simple problems here. Let's do this one. A project costs $400 up front. Then, in year 1, cash flow is $200. In year 2, cash flow is $150. And in year 3, cash flow is $80. And in year 5, cash flow is $30. A project costs $400 up front. Then in year 1, cash flow is positive $200. Year 2, cash flow is positive $150. Year 3, cash flow is $80. And in year 4, I'm just testing your ass there, 4. I wonder why you're looking, what the hell? Year 4, cash flow is $30. Find the net present value of the project if the discount rate is 10%. If the discount rate for the cash flows is 10%. Now, essentially, you could do this by hand. All you would do if you wanted to do it by hand would be simply take negative 400 plus 200 discounted back 1 plus 0.10 to the negative first plus 150 times 1 plus 0.10 to the negative second plus 80 times 1 plus 0.10 to the negative third plus 30 times 1 plus 0.10 to the negative fourth. You could do it that way. There's nothing hard about it. It's just you could make a mistake. God knows I make mistakes all the time. Or you could let your handy calculator take care of it for you. Hit your apps, finance. Now drop down to NPV. You see the little NPV? You can make sure you're all there. Apps, finance, drop down to NPV, hit NPV, and the NPV will come up into the main screen, NPV with a little open parenthesis. And then what you do from there, making sure I do it, and I'm going to actually, I'm a little concerned here because I can't remember whether you put in 0.10 or 10%. Yeah, 10%. Put in 10, comma, and then you put in your cash flow. One, negative 400, comma, put a comma, and then if I'm not mistaken, just 200, comma, 150, comma, 80, comma 30, close the parenthesis and hit enter. I think, and I'm flying blind here, but I think that's what what do you get? Survey says? Error. You lied. Kicked me in the butt. Error, my ass. Is it 0.10? Huh. That bothers me a little bit. Interest rate. I think I'll bet I know what I should do on the TI-83s you got. Try it again. You've got your NPV, open parenthesis, put the 10 comma, and then in braces. And then close it. See what happens. This is like skiing behind a rowboat. I'm trying to use an emulator here, and the emulator is... Aha, yeah. Moo. I've got it. I'm trying to use the emulator. I've got an online version I'm trying to look at here, and it's not. Here's what you do. I would have flopped around all day. See if that does it. I think that's going to do it for you. What is it? Thank God. Praise God. It comes out to be $59. And what was it? 14 cents. You got that one? Yeah. Really? Okay. Negative 13. The 59 was, the 59 was on what I wanted to do up here. Okay, so it comes out here as negative 19 what?
Negative 13.
Negative 13 what?
62.
So do we accept or reject the project? Reject. Now, suppose that instead of a 10% discount rate, we had used a 5% discount rate. The way I'd set this problem up is I wanted it to have a really tight pattern. Use a 5% to kick the same numbers in and see what happens. Use 10. Yeah, it's 10. It's a percentage. What is it? 20.32. Is that what you get? 20.32. So if we were discounting at 5%, would we reject or accept? We would accept the project. So now, notice that we now see the NPV profile like I drew it in a more theoretical context. At a discount rate of 5%, we had a $20 positive. But at a discount rate of 10%, we had a $13 negative. So can you tell me, what do you know now about the internal rate of return of this project? Yeah, it's bracketed somewhere between, it has to be somewhere between 5 and 10%. So we see that, first of all, that relationship, sure enough, as the discount rate increases, the NPV falls. So as the discount rate increases, the probability of rejecting a project will rise. And we see also that in this case, the way I set this up, you saw that these two are obviously bracketing the internal rate of return. Well, what is it? Well, in the old days, if you really were lazy, you know what you'd say the internal rate of return was? 7.5%. That's what you'd say. There's your damn. If you wanted to be a little nuanced about it, you'd use sort of like a weighted average. Well, it's got to be a little bit closer to 5%, so I'm going to guess that it's about 7%. There's your damn internal rate of return. Now, unfortunately, we can't get by with bluntness like that. We can actually get the internal rate of return for this project. So the next thing that we would want to do here is we would want to go back to apps, finance, and this time, we would punch the IRR button. And what would come up with the IRR button is we would see IRR. And in this case, with the open parentheses, we would key in the negative 400, put a comma, then open the braces, and then punch the number sequence in, 200, 150, 200, 150, 80, 30. Close the braces, close the parentheses, and hit go. Hit enter. What is it? 7.9%? What is it to two decimals? 0.90? Sweet. Okay. Now, I want to invoke one more time, just for my own edification, what a pain in the ass this was to do when in the old days you actually just had to just work your way. Oh, well, we know it's between 5 and 10%. So let's try 7%. Oh, it's still positive at 7%. Let's go 8%. Oh, it's negative at 8%. Let's back down to 7.5%. You would just keep working it back and forth. No calculators. You would just keep doing this back and forth until you got it to two decimal places of accuracy. Again, a pain in the dare rear it got to be. There were some tricks that we used, but anymore with these calculators, it's like I said, this used to be a couple of lectures 30 years ago. Now it's just do it on your calculator. All I have to do is remember how to do it from time to time. That's NPV and IRR. That's all there is to it. Now, I do want to point out that there is one nuance of this subject, and I'm going to do that more with the worksheet on Thursday. I'll give you where you'll see something, but I'll bring it up here. You know very well that a company is not going to do just one project at a time, especially you saw with the marginal cost of capital exercise in the IOS schedule. We looked at a set of projects. Okay, now the question there is, what happens if you have more than one project? Well, obviously, as long as the capital markets are complete, you would simply say, well, we'll just take on all the positive NPV projects. But what if you had an unusual situation where two projects were mutually exclusive and they both come up to be positive NPV? That's a little bit more, that's a little bit odder situation. I want you to look at something here. I'm going to take that GER. I erased the problem. Got these stupid things up here on the board. Watch. Let me take everything off here just for a second. And I'm going to write my cash flows. The CF sub zero was negative 200. No, negative 400. And then we had CF sub one was 200. And then CF sub two was 150. And CF sub 3 was 80, and CF sub 4 was 30. Okay, now, suppose that I just rearrange the cash flows a little bit. Everything stays the same, except that I'm going to just reverse a couple of the cash, positive cash flows out there. Oops. CF1 is 150, CF2 is 200, CF3 is 80, and CF4 is 30. Do you see how the first scenario, the first project, is slightly more front-loaded on the cash flow, positive cash flow, just slightly? Now, let's discount again at 5%. Do the 5%, discount the second cash flow at 5%. Now, the NPV of Project 1, this is Project 1, this is Project 2. They're very similar projects. The NPV at 5% for Project 1 came out to be $20.32. That's an accept. The NPV of Project 2 at 5% comes out to be what? What is it?
$18.05.
Not surprisingly, slightly lower. Yes? Not surprisingly, is that right? Because you've got one of the cash flows, the bigger cash flow is a little bit farther back out there in time. So it'll be worth a little less. Now go back and calculate the internal rate of return of Project 2. We know that the internal rate of return for project one was 7.90%. What's the internal rate of return for project two?
7.42.
The IRR of project two is lower. So, notice the interesting thing is that the IRR is lower and the NPV is lower. Essentially, the cash flow, what happened was that the cash flow line essentially tipped backwards a little bit. Just tipped backwards a little bit. It's not as much as I drew there. There's a story behind this that you'll see more when I give you a problem worksheet we'll do together on Thursday. But when you have mutually exclusive projects, as a general rule, don't look at internal rate of return. Just simply say, whichever one gives me the higher NPV is the one that I'll take. Mutually exclusive projects are not that common. And if you encounter a situation where someone says, well, these projects are mutually exclusive, the first question you do not ask is, what's the NPV of each? The first question you ask is, why are they mutually exclusive? How could it be that if two projects both have positive net present value, the capital markets would not be able to provide us with the funds for both projects? If they truly are both positive NPV projects, then there should be a way to fund them, both, unless there's something really unusual about, well, we have only this one building. Unless we want to build another building, we can do only one of these projects. So if we build another building, we have to look at the cash flow in a very different way, especially the upfront cost. That would be a decent justification, but one way or the other, when you have mutual exclusive, definitely pay attention to the NPV. That's all about that. Sadly, there's not a whole lot more to this subject. I can get fancy and talk about the theory behind it, but really it comes down to a very straightforward exercise. Very straightforward. Punch the numbers in and get the answer out. If it's positive NPV, accept. If it's negative NPV, reject. If you're using internal rate of return analysis, you take your hurdle rate. If your internal rate of return is above the hurdle rate, you say yes. If the internal rate of return is below the hurdle rate, you say no. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.